Hey, football fans, Drew Brees here. Kroger Play and Owner's Box have teamed up for the next generation of daily fantasy sports. First-time players can get $25 in free entries, plus 250 fuel points. And you can score all season long with 2x the fuel points for every dollar spent to use at Kroger Fuel Centers. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Void where prohibited. Eligibility restrictions apply. 18+ in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Offer is valid between 8/6/25 and 1/5/26. Terms apply. See full terms and conditions at ownersbox.com/footballfuelpointstc.
Black Friday at BJ's Wholesale Club is so big, we called in the expert at paying less around the holidays.
Scrooge here. Past, present, or future, it's hard to beat the Black Friday deals at BJ's. Believe me, I've tried. Get 25% off select toys, 30% off select small appliances, and 45% off select TVs through December 1st. Plus, doorbuster deals Thanksgiving weekend. These prices are so good they even rattled old Marley's chain. Ah, humbug. Sorry, old habit.
Visit BJ's.com/Black Friday for holiday savings.
Hey, football fans, Drew Brees here. Kroger Play and Owner's Box have teamed up for the next generation of daily fantasy sports. First-time players can get $25 in free entries, plus 250 fuel points. And you can score all season long with 2x the fuel points for every dollar spent to use at Kroger Fuel Centers. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Void where prohibited. Eligibility restrictions apply. 18+ in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Offer is valid between 8/6/25 and 1/5/26. Terms apply. See full terms and conditions at ownersbox.com/footballfuelpointstc.
Hello, welcome to your midweek, and yes, still award-nominated Pod on the Tyne. I'm Taylor Payne, and I'm joined, sitting looking like a Star Wars character with his hood up, it's Chris Woff. How are you doing, Chris? Are you okay?
I'm alright, thank you. I'm absolutely delighted that we're still wringing everything we possibly can out of the fact that we're
award-nominated. And that shall be the case.
And then we'll just never mention it ever again when you're at the award ceremony and then we lose. We'll just never, ever mention it.
I'm going to go full Liam Gallagher at that award ceremony, by the way. I'm just going to get blind drunk and heckle everything that moves and ensure that if we do win anything, it'll be talked about for millennia.
George will be proud.
Oh, I'm going to make him proud. Don't worry about that. Yes, it's been a canny weekend. It's been all right. It's finally stopped raining. The sun's come out. It's a nice day on Tyneside. And Pod on the Tyne is going live once more at the Gosford Civic Theatre for the first time since we've become an independent podcast. And it'll be at the height of the transfer window on the evening of Friday, the 23rd of January. We'll have all the crew, plus Jacob Whitehead and hopefully some other friends as well. And the tickets for that...
We got friends?
No, I haven't. I was hoping you had some.
George will pay a few people, it's all right.
George has got loads of friends, it'll be fine. Tickets are now on general sale at £20 a pop. But it does look like they're shifting quite quickly as well. So don't hang about if you want to join us on that evening, as things are going to sell out very, very soon. It's www.gosfordcivictheatre.co.uk/what-on/pod-on-the-tyne-live. And I will put that in the show notes again because I ain't reading that out twice.
It hasn't got any shorter, that has it, since the last time you
no.
read it. But you mentioned the tickets are shifting fast. They went on sale to subscribers, extra 10 subscribers on Friday. And yeah, we've had more than half sold over the course of the weekend. And only about 60% of those are Woff Ultras, I think. So
the Woff Ultras will be out in full voice, won't they? Setting fire to Lambrettas and chucking them off the top balcony and stuff like that. In the Curva Nord. It still bends my mind a little bit, Chris, that people would pay to come and watch us do this.
Likewise, but we've always been appreciative, but even more so since we've become independent, because these sort of things are, like a subscription service, massive for continuing to help the podcast go and hopefully grow in future. And so, yeah, I'm really looking forward to seeing you all there. The start time's slightly earlier this time as well, because we want to be able to spend a bit more time with everyone who comes in the bar afterwards as well, so that should be delightful.
And Chris, it's a Friday night
in between two very big matches as well.
Absolutely. And speaking of the subscription service, Extra Tyne is a Q&A this week, so please send any questions that you may have to podonthetyne@gmail.com. And for more information on how to listen to that, please go to podonthetyne.supportandcast.fm, where you can subscribe to listen to that and all previous Extra Tyne episodes, including our documentary on the head coach on the occasion of his fourth Eddieversary. I like that. That's good. So, Chris, let's do some headlines before we get into things. Coming up as well, Lasses in a dominant derby display.
Very much so at St. James's Park on Sunday. A pretty dire first half from an entertainment perspective, but then Newcastle in the second half really picked up, won 3-1 in the end. There'll be a package on that later on, but absolutely massive, both in the context of it being a Tyneside derby and generally in the Lasses season.
Some wonderful pinball corner goals going on during that game as well. And there's been an international break, Chris, your favourite thing in the world, and lots of Newcastle players have been on display.
Yes, Nick Voldemada got 2 for Germany, both very well taken goals, so great for his confidence. Malik Chow made his competitive debut, which means he no longer qualifies for, I think it's Finland and Senegal he potentially could have played for beyond that.
Wow.
Anthony Alanga's withdrawn early from the Sweden squad due to personal reasons. I haven't got any more information on that yet. And also Sandro Tonali was also let go of early from the Italy squad before they were hammered by Norway. But that is not due to injury. I think that's largely down to the fact that he could have been suspended for the potential World Cup playoff they will have.
Fair play. And there's a game against Manchester City on the horizon as well, Chris.
Yes, the small matter of Manchester City and Erling Haaland coming to St. James's Park
just
on
what you
Saturday.
Need when you're struggling for form.
Precisely. Newcastle haven't beaten them under Eddie Howe. Eddie Howe's never beaten them in the league, and he's never beaten them in the league as a manager in general. So, huge for St. James's Park on Saturday. Fascinating to see what changes there will be, given that this is meant to have been an international break reset. But, yeah, that the Premier League returns on Saturday.
So, all of that coming up. But first,
I'm happy. I'm going to get my suit measured.
Sport Newcastle, Chris. You were dressed up in a tuxedo a la Chancellor Mbemba and went down the Civic Centre for the Sport Newcastle Awards dinner.
That almost sounded like the chant that used to be about him, the way you said that.
Did it? Did I have the right, meter?
Yeah, it had like... Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And Newcastle took them quite a haul, didn't they?
They certainly did, yeah. So, yeah, Chancellor Mbemba, I'm glad you went to that rather than Florian Thauvin, who basically copied Mbemba and then also turned up in his tuxedo famously. And I think that was early McLaren era, wasn't it, 2015-16?
It was so strange, that, because when Mbemba did it, everyone went, oh, isn't that canny? Isn't he wearing a tuxedo? Isn't that canny? And then when Thauvin did it, everyone went, that's stupid. Stop it. That's ridiculous.
Well, to be fair on Mbemba, I think that he actually did it generally. They were told to wear it suits, and I think he just went and bought a suit.
He went full black tie.
Thauvin was like, yeah, then Thauvin was just like, oh, you know, I'll do that because he was a bit of a rogue.
He was.
Allegedly. Anyway, the Sport Newcastle Awards ceremony at the Civic Centre on Thursday, always a great night. Newcastle won Team of the Year because obviously they lifted the Carabao Cup in March, first domestic trophy in 70 years, first trophy of any form for 56 years. Dan Byrne won the Achievement of the Year Award, the Individual Achievement of the Year Award. He was obviously on England national duty that night, but he'd been presented with the trophy ahead of time, and the video of him receiving the award was there. But as we're going to hear from soon, Sean Neave won the War Jackie, the prestigious War Jackie Award. Charlotte Wardlaw won the Jack Hickson Award, which used to be awarded to younger male players, but now goes to the best up-and-coming female player at Newcastle United. And then also, yeah, Les Utembip, I think is how you say it, who is an England international, 15-year-old, England under-16 at national, very, very highly rated centre-back, also took home a Rising Star Award. Academy Director Steve Harper was there to present some of the awards. Shola Ramiobi was also there and collected the team trophy for both Newcastle, and he was also on stage a bit later on to talk about Dan Byrne. He lifted up the Carabao Cup.
Wow.
Was also there alongside us, and he lifted it up in celebration. So it was quite a thing for the night. So yeah, and great celebration. Sport Newcastle's a charity which basically invests in youth and tries to help the potential stars of the future. And one of them who benefited from it years ago was Jonathan Edwards, the triple jumper, who actually received a special award because it was 30 years since he set his triple jump world record, which still holds now.
Incredible stuff. Absolutely incredible stuff.
And yeah, so before they received their awards, I had a bit of a chat with both Sean Neave and Charlotte Wardlaw to hear about how they felt about the awards and also generally how they're coming along. So first of all, chat to Sean Neave, the very exciting 18-year-old Newcastle striker who already, despite having yet to make a competitive appearance for Newcastle United's first team, has a League Cup winner's medal.
Yeah, it's an absolute pleasure. I've worked really hard in my career to get to this point, and obviously, I'm following the steps of like Lewis Miley and Elliot Anderson and win this trophy. So, yeah, it's been a really proud moment for my family to win this award. And hard work continue now, and hopefully I can push through and get my dream to play for my boyhood club. Obviously, it's unreal seeing lads from Newcastle coming up and playing, making it through to the first team and going on to have such a good career. And hopefully I can push on and I can do the same as what they're doing and have a good career myself. Obviously, my whole family are Newcastle supporters, so it means a lot to them and it also means a lot to me. Obviously, playing for the club, and some of the senior lads have been really good with us when I've been up there training. And obviously, you said the cup final, that was just an unbelievable moment for me. Obviously, my boyhood club and winning the cup final and getting a medal, it was just unbelievable. And I've been just really taking it as like a learning curve, being trained up there and with the first team, and obviously involved a lot last season. Obviously, I was a bit gutted I didn't get a debut, but hopefully that can come this season.
You mentioned about being up training ready. Can you just remind me the first time that you went up there, how you felt and what you, how you've grown since then?
Yeah, the first time I went up, I remember I was really, really nervous. I didn't expect it at all. But I feel like now when I go up there, I'm just a lot more confident in myself. Obviously, involved a lot in the games on the bench and then obviously the cup final. I'm training up there a lot more. It gives us a lot more confidence. Obviously, I'm getting to know the players a lot more. And yeah, it's just unbelievable. So hopefully I just keep it going.
And what have he and the first team coaches said to you about what they want to see from you going forward? Because obviously they're taking a liking to you. They clearly like what you can bring. Well, what have they said about the next steps for you?
Yeah, I feel like I just need to keep going, keep pushing. They've recognised my performances in the under-21s and they've let us know how I've been doing. And I'm proud of how I've started the season, and hopefully I get a lot more recognition from the first team and the staff, and hopefully I can be up there a lot more than what I am now.
And so far this season, you've been playing a few different positions for the 21s and the 19s. You've played that sort of slightly deeper role. You've played up top as well. Where do you feel most comfortable, or you're not sure yet what your position is long term?
As I grew up, obviously, I was a national goal scorer, so I love playing as a 9. But as my career has went on, I've noticed like I'm really good in the pocket, like as a 10, and I really enjoy playing there, getting on the ball, running the players. I feel like that's more my game. And obviously, I'm still a natural goal scorer, so the goals have obviously come with playing in a 10, but I just feel a lot more comfortable running the players and getting on with the ball and receiving it. And just running the players, and I feel a lot more comfortable in a 9 than I do as a 9, in the 10, sorry, as I do as a 9. But obviously, I do love playing as a 9. It's my natural position, so yeah.
And do you envisage staying at Newcastle for the rest of the season, or has there been a loan spoken about, or are you not sure what happens after Christmas yet?
There's not been much talk on it, but I think for me, I feel like I should go on loan and obviously I can get the experience in first team football, play week in, week out, get the experience, and then come back at the end of the season and see what happens from there. But no, I feel like just take the season as it goes on and see what happens.
And finally, just the Ward Jackie Trophy, will that go alongside the Cup Winners' Medal, which I believe you got? Whereabouts is that living in your house?
That's in a minute, it's in the safe in my granddad's house. it's locked away, but I'm going to get it framed up and I'll get them put next to each other in my house.
Great to hear from Sean Leave. I'd never spoken to him before, and I was pleasantly surprised. I mean, I really like watching him on the field, but I also think he has sort of, when you watch him, he's developed a, I will say it borders along sort of arrogance in terms
there's
of the way that he
there,
sort of
isn't
moves.
And,
yeah, there's a swagger there, but also he has that, I suppose you want in a forward, he has that sort of stroppiness as well. If he doesn't receive the ball, if he doesn't come to certain positions.
Yeah.
And his body language is quite clear and maybe overly so sometimes would be what I would perhaps say. But he was really nice, came across and chatted, he's only 18 years of age. A bit nervous, yet was very eloquent in what he said. And I mean, just in his final answer, when I did ask him about the potential for going out on loan, I mean, I think he uses the word should, but I just wanted to put that into context and say that I don't think this is not Sean Neave pleading to go out on loan in January. Yeah. That he definitely needs to. This is one of the very first interviews he's done. He's an 18-year-old lad. I think what he's just saying is that he can see that potentially being a natural career progression from here. He's been in and around the first team. He's got that League Cup winners medal. He looks a cut above at under-19 and under-21 level than I've seen him so far this year. And if he isn't going to play for the first team, then it perhaps makes sense for him to go out alone. But those conversations haven't fully happened yet. I think it potentially is in the plan that's certainly under consideration, depending if the right club's available. But it also depends whether he's going to get a look in the first team. So that partly depends on the fitness of those the strikers that Newcastle have there. But yeah, I was very impressed with him, and certainly someone who Newcastle have very high hopes with. Eddie Howe really, really likes Sean Neave.
Lovely stuff. And you spoke to Charlotte Wardlaw as well?
I did, yes. First time I'd ever spoken to Charlotte Wardlaw. She joined the club early in the year, then it made it permanent, and she's performed very well. She did really well, I thought, right back in the derby on Sunday, and it was great to hear about how she feels about joining the club, why she joined the club, and her receiving this award.
It's really an honour. It's my first award in my professional career, so to be noticed and recognised means a lot to me, and I've been loving it in Newcastle, and yeah, just ready to keep on pushing on. I feel like it was a big step in my career to move somewhere new and just to like start and keep building, and I've had the support from everyone and all the fans, so it's been easy to just keep pushing. It's a really exciting place to be, and the club matches my ambitions and aligns with how I want to compete as an athlete. And the city is obviously amazing with wonderful people, so it's a real honour to be here.
How long have you known that you were going to win an award?
Maybe a couple of weeks or so. So yeah, it was really, really exciting.
What was the sort of vision sold to you about the club? Why did you choose here?
It's a club that wants to be competing in Europe and being the best in the country. So it's somewhere I want to be winning and achieving a lot of success.
And so far this season, I suppose it hasn't quite gone exactly how you would have wanted it so far, but big games coming up. The ambition, I assume, is still promotion.
Yeah, 100%. We may have not got the results we wanted, but the performances have been improving, and we know it's about putting those into results. But our ambition stayed the same. We know it's still possible.
And finally, the interim coaches who are in charge, how have they been so far since they've taken charge?
It's great. The culture's been really good, supporting every single player. It's a really good feel at the club at the moment, and we all know the ambition and the goal.
Big news! The sale of the season is here. It's Wayfair's Black Friday sale, and it's on now. Right now, get up to 80% off everything home and everything you need for the season ahead. Save on quality furniture for every room in the house. Essentials for the guest room, whether it's new bedding or a new mattress. Kitchen and dining must-haves for all your hosting needs. And seasonal home finds like throw pillows and decor. Or favorites that you'll use all year long. And with amazing doorbuster deals from November 27th through December 2nd, you can shop the things you love at even lower prices at Wayfair. Plus, you can sit back and relax with Wayfair's fast and easy shipping. Everything home comes straight to your home. And the best part? Free delivery just in time for the holidays. This Black Friday, Wayfair deals are bigger and better than ever. There's no place like home for the holidays. And no place like Wayfair for Black Friday savings. So don't wait. Black Friday ends soon. Shop Wayfair's Black Friday sale now and save up to 80% off at Wayfair.com.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Right then, on to the Lasses. Obviously a difficult start to the season for the Lasses. Becky Langley paid the price for that, and her former assistant Claire Ditchburn is still in interim charge with no news on a managerial appointment as we record this on the 17th of November. Results in the WSL 2 have picked up since the international break, though a good win at Ipswich and then a good point away at Durham, and then this week was the biggie, wasn't it? Sunderland at St James's Park.
Well, good morning. It is Sunday morning at 11:38. It is Derby Day, which is very, very exciting. You can hear the background noise. That's because I'm walking along the quayside through the quayside market. Thought I'd bring you the noises of here. Ollie's probably not going to be very pleased with that because I'm just about to walk under the work going on the Tamebridge as well. And you've got all the generators at the market setting all the food stalls going. But anyway, I just thought it'd be nice to get a bit of a feel. There's quite a few Newcastle shirts around here. I haven't seen any Sunderland ones yet. I'm sure we'll see some at St James's Park in a bit. Don't think it's going to be the bumper crowd necessarily of last year, but still, they'd already sold 15,000 tickets as of midweek. Hopefully it gets somewhere above 20,000, and there's quite a few walk-ins on the day potentially, because yeah, it's the first time I'm going to have seen Newcastle United women live this season, and I'm looking forward to it. I'm intrigued really to see where they're at. Managerless Newcastle United, which is odd in itself. Feels like we're at a bit of a fork in the road really for where they go next. I'm actually going to be writing about this after the game, so what is the vision, what is the grand plan now? And it seems the ambition is undimmed, but obviously Newcastle have Claire Ditchman in interim charge. They don't currently have a head coach permanently in charge. Peter Ramage has moved across from being assistant loans manager to also be involved there on the coaching side, but it just doesn't feel long-term sustainable at the moment. It feels like there needs to be a change in some regard, and they need some stability and some refreshing of direction, because Becky Langley, you can argue, would she have taken Newcastle to the next level? Clearly Newcastle feel that they should be high on the table, that she wasn't getting the most out of the group of players she'd had.
But she also has dragged Newcastle up two divisions. She's dragged them from, well, I was going to say semi-professional, even before that, through to professionalism, up the divisions. She has been the face of this, really, and also the real driving force behind where Newcastle have managed to get to. And it felt like a large part of the support base were really getting behind her. Obviously, there's been flags of her, and she's really, really highly regarded. And ruthless nature of removing her, we'll have to wait and see whether the ends justify the means, really, in that regard. And it's a big day for Newcastle in the promotion push. They're not cut adrift yet, but they obviously just can't find consistent form. I haven't been able to yet this season. This could really give them either positive momentum or negative momentum, depending on which way it goes today. Sunderland, the rivals, not just in a sort of local sense, in a geographical sense, but also, I think, maybe in terms of level of club, finishing a similar position last year. Newcastle got the better of them, both home and away last year. I was there when they won a tight game at St James's Park last year, and so I'm fascinated to see how all of that goes. I'll report back once I'm actually up at St James's, once we see the team. But I also just want to reiterate, when I've mentioned the flags of Becky Langley and like, there is a women's surfer flag, which War Flags are working on at the moment. They've extended the time until the end of November. If you want to get your name on that, donate to help get it ready for future matches like this at St James's Park, and I suppose even at Gator Stadium from time to time, then make sure you go to War Flag social media and online and add your name there. But anyway, I'll check in again in a bit from the actual very close build-up to Derby Day, where the anticipation will certainly be palpable.
Apologies. Well, there's nothing really I can really do about the fact that there's a DJ playing music at an obscenely loud level here. Yeah, I think it's Rihanna or something like that. I assume it is. I'm not going to lie, the crowd is not absolutely massive. I've heard they've sold 18,000 tickets, but there might have been some more tickets on the day. I think it's not going to be much more than 20,000. Yeah, they've got a DJ just absolutely blasting off the tunes. The stands maybe about half full, same with the Gallagher. Well, Gallagher maybe a third full. Say the south stand, these maybe about a third full as well, and the Melbourne similar. There are a lot of black and white flags. There's some guys singing the Bladen races outside the Strawberry. There's a lot of red and white. People like the flags actually walk up the stadium as well. There's not that many fans. There's maybe 150, 200 in the far corner as things stand, but seemingly mingling with both the Wearside and Tyneside divide outside the ground. So yeah, whether this is usable or not as audio, I don't know, because as I say, it's just obscenely loud, and I apologise for that. But yeah, I'll try and check in again in a minute or two and talk about the team itself. Whether that previous audio was usable or not, I don't know, but for those who couldn't hear it, basically the DJ has been some music ridiculously loud. The team has been announced outside, but yeah, so Newcastle side just being led by Claire Ditchburn today. Beth Lumsden is in the side, Demi Stokes too, Charlotte Wardlaw, who, as we heard about on the rest of the show, won the Sport Newcastle Jack Hickson Award this week. Also Una Sabinius, who's been a good form, Alicia Boddy, Shania Hales, who scored in this fixture last season. So yeah, very interesting Newcastle side, and hopefully one who can gain successful in the derby.
That's half time, and it's goalless at St James's Park, and I can't pretend it's been anything bordering upon a classic. In fact, clear cut opportunities have basically been nil. Shania Hills had a blocked shot from close range in the 32nd minute. Una Savinius had a shot from the edge of the area. Half clear corner, which was blocked, and then Molly Pike shot wide outside the box soon afterwards. It's been a tasty challenge between Charlotte Wardlaw and Emily Scar, where Emily Scar really sort of went for her. And Sunderland have tried to get Newcastle on the counter. Newcastle have had a lot of the ball without really doing that much with it. And Shania Hills has run a lot of channels but hasn't actually received the ball. And yeah, it's been fairly turgid stuff so far. The highlights really have been me and the Scotch egg, which I bought from the Quayside Market, as I mentioned that earlier. I managed to walk past the Geordie Banger's stand without getting a Geordie Banger, but I did actually have one of those yesterday. So yeah, I had a Scotch egg, a treat, so, and pork Scotch egg, which is very yummy. And I had a packet of Twiglets, very 1980s. And I've had a full packet of cherry cola sweets, but I've also managed to spill tea all over my laptop and my crotch, so it looks like I've wet myself. So beyond that, I've basically provided the entertainment to the press box, but let's hope that actually there's far more entertainment from a Newcastle United perspective on the second half on the pitch.
First real opportunity that we've had in the game was a handball there. Yes, it was. It struck the arm of Aoife Mannion, and Sunderland had the chance to go ahead from the penalty spot. Referee making sure there's no encroachment. Penalty then to be taken by Eleanor Dale. Oh, what a save that is from Anna Tamminen. She guessed correctly and made an important block to keep the score at 0-0. Free kick from Kitching, and it drops onto the top of the crossbar, and so close to a Sunderland opener. Nobbs with a corner for Newcastle, and Cooper at the far post has opened the scoring in the time-wear derby. Minister Venus went off the ball there and was looking for a free kick, but nothing was doing. Scramble in the six-yard box. Murphy for Newcastle to make it 2-0. Corner from Kitching. Mannion on the line. Headed in. And Sunderland, half the deficit. Murphy at wide to Savenius. Savenius cutting inside. Here is Murphy again. Murphy letting fly. And finding the back of the net. What an impact she's made as a second half substitute. Two second half goals, doubling her tally for the season. We've played 7 minutes of stoppage time, but no more, because Newcastle United have won the Tyne-Wear Derby by 3-1 in what really was a fabulous second half.
But there we go, for the games, Newcastle 3, Sunderland 1. So James and Mark, you have lived an amazing thing. You've brought the love, you've brought the energy, and you definitely apply for the parting continues to be a great benefit.
I've seen an incredible game, and there's only one thing left to say.
It's a great win, that, Chris, isn't it? A classic game of two halves, but a great result.
Well, it was a classic game of two halves in the sense of entertainment, not in terms of one side dominated the first and the other side dominated the second, as it can be. It was, the first half was just a complete lack of entertainment. It was like 100 miles an hour, but with no real quality. And there was basically wasn't a chance, a clear-cut chance of note for either side.
I think there was a bit of nerves there, maybe?
Yeah, potentially, and obviously not used to playing in that environment, despite having played at St James's from time to time. It's a newish Newcastle side, largely in terms of the look of them, and it's still a different environment. So I think so, and also generally that's probably how Newcastle have been so far this season, trying to get to know one another, trying to build that. But then in the second half, it really came to life in a 5-minute spell where there were three corners, Newcastle went 2-0 up. Sunderland pulled one back, and it was just really entertaining the second half. But I thought Newcastle were deserved winners in the end, sort of stronger, physically dominated the key spells of the match, and scored really at the point where Sunderland had really started to take charge a little bit, and after a big penalty save as well. So yeah, absolutely massive, massive win.
And they did power on in that second half, didn't they? Deanna Cooper got her second St James's Park goal, which is lovely to see.
It is lovely to see. The last time was a dramatic equaliser against Southampton, this time last year, and so sort of bundled it over. It was hard to see exactly who it was from the press box, but it was Deanna Cooper who got the goal, and it was huge for Newcastle at that stage. They then get a corner from the other side. Emily Murphy, who came on as a substitute and changed the game, really. I thought she was really, really good. She managed to get the second one, but Sunderland hit straight back at the other end and could have got a bit nervy, but then Murphy with a shot from distance which bounced in front of the keeper, she couldn't keep it out, and Newcastle, as I say, were absolutely deserved winners. Murphy had also had a one-on-one which had been saved, so it was, yeah, huge for so many reasons, not only because it's Newcastle maintained their unbeaten record at St James's Park in competitive matches, impressively have never lost there, and have won back-to-back derbies there now, but also just in the context of the season, since Ditchburn took charge, Newcastle have taken 7 points from nine. It's lifted them up to fourth on the table. Suddenly, automatic promotion looks like it's achievable once more, whereas it was looking increasingly a distant prospect, and that is the ambition. That is why Becky Langley was dismissed. It's very much the driving force behind the search for a new manager. I know you mentioned earlier that there hasn't been a managerial appointment yet. The information I'm receiving is that it seems that that could be in the not too distant future. I think someone's been identified now who they're trying to get that sorted. I don't have a name for you specifically, but basically it's to try and the idea is that this is meant to be an appointment which will take Newcastle on to the next level. So we will see in time whether that does and whether the ends have justified the means in terms of removing Becky Langley from her position. But certainly Claire Ditchburn has done very well with her job so far. She's very highly rated internally, and yeah, to have got a win at St James's Park and in the Derby, very, very impressive for her.
I have to say as well, Chris, I'm as much of a fan as an aesthetically pleasing goal as the next man, but I do love a good goal mouth scramble, and there was three of those, wasn't there, in that game? Three absolute pinball goals where the ball's flying around all over the place and there's boots flying and eventually it nestles in the net. I love to see a bit of that.
Yeah, I mean, the second half was just chaos, really. There was just something happening basically every minute or so. You mentioned that the scramble, three goals in the space of 5 minutes, and they came after the penalty incident where it looked, and that was a 0-0. And I really, really felt for Newcastle in that situation because they'd been sort of in control of the game. They then concede the penalty and you think, oh, Sunderland score here at the Gallagher end. This could be huge. But Anna Tamminen, on her debut, makes a save down to right now. I mean, she's played in Champions League games. She's played in some big matches before. But still, to make your debut at St James's Park and to basically save your first real save end. Of note. Yeah, save a penalty at the Gallagher end. Your first real save of note as a Newcastle United player. So massive for her, and it turned out to be huge in the context of the game.
Absolute dream world stuff. Brilliant. Fairly comfortable, though, to see it out from there, wasn't it? A confidence-building win, you'd have to say.
Yeah, I mean, it's strange because I've mentioned Newcastle's record at St James's Park. If only they played there every week, because they haven't yet won a competitive fixture at the Gated National Stadium, their new home, since they've moved across the water, moved across to have the grass pitch rather than the plastic pitch. There had been an attempt to try and buy basically Kingston Park, I believe, before Red Bulls took charge of the rugby outfit there, and then maybe that would have been better suited to them. But the reality is that for now they're playing the Gated National Stadium. They need to find some form there. They need to translate it across to there, because the first win that Claire Ditchburn oversaw was away at Ipswich. They then drew away at Durham. They've won at home against Sunderland, and so now but at home being St James's Park, and now it's about if they are going to have any hopes of going up, they certainly need to address the form at Gated at National Stadium.
And that WSL2 table's starting to look a lot healthier, isn't it? They're only 3 points behind Bristol City in third now. The top two go straight up third place, will play off against a WSL side. They're within touching distance, basically.
They are. I mean, Charlton are starting to run away with it a little bit. I mean, they're 10 points ahead of Newcastle, 4 points ahead of Birmingham in second, and then it's Bristol City, as you mentioned. Newcastle on 13, very congested between fourth down to second bottom. So Newcastle have picking up 7 points from nine has really managed to elevate them up the table. Sunderland are suddenly looking over their shoulders and looking at potential relegation spots. So it shows how tight it is. Newcastle need to keep this going, but they have reignited that hope of being able to go up, whether that be automatically as they'd ideally like, but also as a minimum they'd like to get that third place in the relegation playoff against a third bottom side in the WSL.
Quite a strange schedule for women's football in November, December as well. They've got Everton in the League Cup next week, and then just two league games in December, in contrast to the men's, which is packed out over Christmas, isn't it?
Yeah, it's very stop-start. They've got another international break as well. It's all very frustrating, as it's been from sort of men's point of view. You'd like to, I think in some ways, that have liked game after game after game, given that they are starting to pick up a bit of positive momentum. But equally, if a new head coach, manager, whatever the title will be, does take charge in the not-too-distant future, maybe having that sort of schedule might actually suit them as they try to get their ideas across, really install their own ideas there. So, but we wait and see on that regard. It certainly feels like they would like the positive momentum to keep going on the field with just having league match after league match.
Come on, you Mackies. Right then, let's move on, Chris. International roundup. It is, of course, the international break, your favourite time of the year. We really could do with a correspondent of some description, couldn't we, for this stuff? Neither of us have watched a single second of any of the football. Apart from, I watched Cristiano Ronaldo Højstrup against Ireland, which I thought was hilarious.
I watched Nick Valdemar's goals on, social media. I didn't watch it live, but I saw the goals on social media. So.
Well, good for you, Chris. good for you. That, you see, little changes like that, and eventually maybe you'll invite international football into your life.
No, I don't think so.
Okay, fair enough. Luckily, Biffa and Nyla at NUFC.com provide a thorough roundup of such things, so we've nicked the homework, but please do make use of that site. It is very, very good. It's been around for a long, long time, and there's an awful lot of wonderful information on there. Let's pick through the details and see what's notable. There's been an incredibly boring campaign for England who haven't really gotten out of first gear. Been great for Dan Byrne, though, Chris, hasn't it?
Yeah, well, he didn't play on the night, as I mentioned, the Sport Newcastle dinner. He was actually stayed on the bench, but he started in Albania on Sunday, played 90 minutes. Is certainly, you'd like to think now, very much in the thinking for the World Cup squad for next summer. I think he did have...
I really hope so.
I hope so as well
I
for
really
him.
Hope to see him in the... It'll be brilliant.
Yeah, I think he had one difficult moment where he conceded possession deep inside his own half and Albania nearly got through and scored, but generally... Thomas Tuchel seems to really like him. He brings leadership. He's also someone who I think, if he is going to go as a squad player, as you'd imagine, he's exactly the sort of personality you want in behind the scenes for a wider squad game, someone who will drive standards. And so, yeah, no Anthony Gordon, obviously, because he withdrew due to this ongoing hip problem. So we wait and see whether he'll be available for Man City.
Sandro Tonali for Italy played in the first game for them. Moldova won 2-0 away. Full 90 minutes for him. Two late goals as the Azzurri won it. And then... Italy got beat 4-1 off Norway, and he didn't feature at all in Milan, apparently to avoid any risk of suspension in future games. There have been claims about his fitness flying around, Chris. Can you shed any light on that?
Well, it was slightly odd this, because Tonali, there were some comments released in the Italian media about how he was really looking forward to playing back at San Siro, because he hadn't been there since Newcastle last played there in the early first game of the Champions League 2 years ago. But... he did withdraw from the squad, and I think there were multiple reasons for this. Newcastle have had an illness bug going around the squad, and I think that Tonali was one of the players who was affected, so whether he's still feeling any after effects of that, I'm not entirely sure. But he was one yellow card away from a suspension. This Norway game, Italy were going to have to win, I think it was something like 9-0 to have turned it around to automatically qualify and finish top of the group. Obviously, they end up losing in the end, so I think that basically they decided it was better to hold Tonali back for the potential qualifier they're going to have, or the qualifier they will now have, rather than risk getting them suspended. So as far as I'm aware, and I have done checks on it, as far as I'm aware, I've had nothing back suggesting he is actually injured, so fingers crossed if it is just fatigue or the like, and that he is available. And given that Newcastle and Eddie Howe are working on a sort of revitalised game plan for the return after the international break, maybe having Sandro Tonali back sooner is a blessing.
Yes, absolutely. Bruno Guimaraes as well, his midfield pal, played against Senegal for Brazil at the Emirates Stadium. He started the game, completed the entire 90 minutes. Good showing from him.
Yeah, it was in London, so he hasn't had to travel across to East Asia as he did during the previous international break.
Yeah,
he hasn't had, as far as I'm aware, hasn't had any flight issues like last time when there was a cracked window or whatever it was in his flight. Joe Linton obviously not involved because he was injured. I don't know if he got called up anyway. But Amanda Staveley came out with remarks at the weekend. I think it was on Sky Sports, chatting about the boxing, and she said that she was in London hoping to find Bruno Guimaraes. So I don't know whether they actually did find one another, but they have a very good positive relationship, as Staveley tend to do with most of the squad. So interesting if there's a little catch up there or not.
Sounds like a great night out there, Chris.
Trying to get yourself an invite along.
Absolutely. Absolutely want to be involved in that. Nick Maltavada. That's a new one.
Nick Maltavada.
I haven't said that one yet. Nick Valdemar and Malik Chow, both involved for Germany. 1-2-0 at Luxembourg. Three goals in two internationals. Now for Valdemar, who netted twice, one with each foot. From close range, a lovely finish as well.
Yeah, the first one sort of sliding finish at the box. The second one, he actually asked for the ball to be played in behind a defender, sort of runs
Imagine
in and finishes
that.
Close. Yeah, off the shoulder. Yeah, not what you necessarily expected from him. He credited Leroy Sané with the assists, and yeah, it wasn't important in that regard. But for him, huge to have that confidence boost. Speaking to people in Newcastle, they're just really, really pleased that he's got that. Feels like a confidence booster after it was a difficult back end of the sort of last period of games for him. He looked tired, he was tired, he's been playing every match every week, which wasn't the plan initially, and physically I think he's been a bit spent, and away from home he hasn't really suited the way Newcastle's playing. So for him, huge. And Malik Chow, yeah, recalled to the Germany squad, first time he's been in the Germany squad under Julian Nagelsmann, I believe. For him to have made in what's technically his competitive debut.
Yes.
And that means that, as I say, he now no longer qualifies for any other team. He had played in friendlies before, but just rewards for his wonderful start to life at Newcastle.
He's been fabulous. Nick Valtamara completed 90 minutes as well, which is good to see. Malik Chow joined him for the last 10 minutes of the game. Brilliant stuff. Also, we didn't mention, but Brazil played Tunisia in Lille on Tuesday as well. So we'll keep all eyes on that to see, make sure Bruno Guimarães comes through that unscathed. Anthony Elanga played for Sweden. They lost 4-1. An absolutely disastrous campaign for the Swedes, this, isn't it? But they have an absurd entry into the playoffs because of this stupid Nations League backdoor rule. It's an absolutely awful story there.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know the full ins and outs of it other than, I mean, I just do not understand the Nations League and how you can still qualify beyond it. It's all very complicated. But yeah, absolutely ludicrous given how poor they've been. Not a great start to life for Graham Potter as Sweden manager either. They really are struggling at the moment. And Elanga, yeah, subsequently withdrawn from the squad ahead of their game against Slovenia. Unclear exactly why, beyond there's reports in Sweden that the official briefing was that for personal reasons, so hopefully everything's okay in that regard. Hopefully he's all right. We'll keep an eye on that to see exactly what the fallout from that is.
Interestingly, he played 78 minutes on the left wing for Sweden the other night. We haven't seen him deployed on that side for Newcastle yet.
He's come on in games there, but hasn't usually started there. He is a natural right-footed winger, but he has evolved to be able to play with his left foot very strong, so he could almost play as an orthodox left winger despite being right foot as well there, because he's very strong on both feet. So I mean Newcastle's arguably two strongest wingers play left wing anyway in Anthony Gordon and Harvey Barnes, so that they are quite stacked in that regard. So I think it's unlikely that he would see that many minutes there, whereas he was signed as a right winger primarily, but there is the knowledge that he could play there and also through the middle.
Okay, on to the Lewises, Hall and Miley, playing for England under-21s. They won 2-0 against Ireland, and they were both in the starting lineup, both completed 70 minutes. Lewis Hall especially impressed, apparently.
Yeah, apparently he was very, very good. I saw a lot of reports from him and his performance. Basically looked a cut above, I think, down the left-hand side, very creative in possession, showed a good engine, got up and down. That's going to be massive. He is going to start almost certainly against Man City on Saturday. I know Dan Byrne, who's suspended, but also Newcastle want to get him back in the side. I know a lot of fans were frustrated that he didn't necessarily start just before the international break. I think Eddie Howe and the medical staff would argue that it was the right thing to hold Lewis Hall back to make sure he is going to be fit and available longer term, having had two injuries which have basically kept him largely sidelined since March. He had come back at the side a little bit, but hasn't played that much football since then. He is huge for Newcastle, just as Tino Livramento, once he will be back, massive on the other side. So yeah, really pleased to see him get some minutes and some confidence boosted minutes, and he's going to be massive over the course of the next few weeks. Fullback is definitely an area Newcastle need to improve upon. Lewis Miley hasn't seen that much football recently. Like to see him get more minutes in the Premier League and Champions League. Hopefully we will over the course of the next few weeks, because the midfield has not functioned particularly well. So for him, again, really good to get that run out, because he is not in the senior way for that side as Lewis Hall is. Lewis Hall's basically dropping down from the senior setup to get minutes, really, and going forward you'd suspect he gets back into that England squad, maybe even hopefully for the World Cup, whereas Lewis Miley is still establishing himself England at 21, so very good to see him get those minutes.
Excellent stuff. Right then, mercifully, domestic men's football returns on Saturday, and Eddie Howe's side of a nice easy home match against, let's just check these notes here, Manchester City and Erling Haaland, just what you need. Still a fair way off this game, isn't it? But we can have a look into some of the broader issues going into it. Eddie Howe, Newcastle's Premier League record against Manchester City requires improvement, to say the least, Chris.
Yeah, I mean, that's sort of one way of putting it. Yeah, so Howe's never beaten Man City in the Premier League as Newcastle head coach, but beyond that, he's faced Manchester City 18 times as a Premier League manager. He's drawn 2 and lost 16.
Good Lord.
And it's the most a manager's faced an opponent in the competition without ever winning. He did win, if we remember correctly, in the League Cup.
That's
during
right,
the run to the final in 2022-23. The one at St. James's Park, deservedly so. But yes, in the Premier League, it's Man City and Liverpool basically have been, and Bournemouth have been the sides that Eddie Howe has been unable to beat as Newcastle manager. So in that regard, not particularly positive.
No.
And Newcastle in general have just won one of the last 35 Premier League meetings against Man City. Do you remember that game?
Ooh, now you're asking us a question.
It was under Rafa Benitez.
Not off the top of my head, I can't. You're going to mention it and I'm going to know who it is. Did Solomon Rondon score by any chance?
I think Solomon Rondon did. I'm just going to check because I remember that Sergio Aguero scored within like 20-odd seconds.
That's right, yeah.
24 seconds, apparently. And so you were very much worried about that record. But then, yeah, Solomon Rondon scored. And then it was the winning goal came via a Matt Ritchie penalty after Sean Longstaff won the penalty. So, yeah, so that was the only time in
35 games,
yeah, that Newcastle have beaten Manchester City. I mean, Manchester City have been very good for most part of that, but even so.
So you're telling us there's a chance, Chris?
There's a 1 in 35 chance.
Good Lord, right. How have Newcastle been using this international break? The change has to be coming, surely.
Well, George and I have written about this on The Athletic this week, and yes, very much so. Everyone inside Newcastle, the feeling is universal that change needs to arrive. Change is coming. By that, it's certainly not a change of manager. There is it's full unity inside the club, full backing of Eddie Howe, but also some hard conversations have been had over the course of this fortnight. A lot of introspection, really, from Howe and others as to how the club and the team can move forward, what changes need to be made, that basically they just can't keep going on in the way that they have been going on in the Premier League. It's weird because Newcastle have actually won 6 of the last 9 games in all competitions, but most of those have been in other competitions than the Premier League, and those 3 games, the 3 defeats have been away in the Premier League, and that's where they've got the major issue with the Premier League. They're 14th, they really are struggling there, there needs to be change, they lack pace away from home, they look like they've lacked energy. And so whether Howe's been using this break to, part of it's almost been like a mini pre-season because Newcastle haven't been training, there's a belief that they haven't been able to get fit enough to do exactly what he wants to do. So there's been that for those players who've been around. I very much suspect that we'll see changes of personnel, maybe even change of formation. Wouldn't surprise me if there's a 5 at the back against Man City, possibly away at Everton, those sorts of changes there. I think that in midfield, regardless of whether Joe Linton's fit or not, I think there's a very much strong case to have Jacob Ramsey come in the side, add a bit of dynamism, try to get him regular minutes in the team. Joe Willock maybe get even more minutes off the bench, someone who can stretch sides. We saw, hopefully, him starting to regain a bit of form against Athletic Bilbao. So those sorts of changes are what I can see over the course of the next few weeks. It feels like, If Newcastle were to keep going the way they were going before the international break, that would then feel like it's end of day stuff. If Eddie Howe doesn't change things and he's adamant behind the scenes, other people are adamant behind the scenes, there will be change. And it's just interesting to see what that is because, as you can imagine, everyone is keeping that under wraps because, Eddie Howe rarely forthcoming with injuries, never mind subtle tactical tweaks or maybe even major tactical tweaks that are going to be coming along the line. And so I think there also needs to be, George mentioned this the other day, there needs to be a mentality shift. Newcastle are focusing, almost all some of the players are getting up for the Champions League games, getting up for the Carabao Cup games, but they need to be getting up for the Premier League games. In many ways, that needs to be the priority in the short term because otherwise the season will quickly get away from them in the top flight.
Dan Burn is, of course, suspended after his red card against Brentford. You'd expect Lewis Hall would slot in and take his place. Any other changes that you would expect to happen?
Yeah, I'd be shocked if Lewis Hall's not in that lineup. Livramento, I think it'll probably come a bit too soon to start the game necessarily, but hopefully he may be there or thereabouts for being in and around the squad. So Kieran Trippier, you would suspect to start right back. As I said before, I think Jacob Ramsey comes into the team. Jacob Murphy's been around on Tyneside again, so I think he'll start. Whether Anthony Gordon's fit or not, I think I'd play Harvey Barnes for this one. I think he deserves it after scoring away at Brentford. And yeah, he had a tough day to a certain degree with others, but this is going to come too soon for Johan Wisser. I think was probably talking towards the end of the month when he might be in and around the squad. Be interesting to hear what Howe says about him on Friday. They're very keen to get him into the team. I was going to say back in the team, but he hasn't played yet, but there's also a recognition that they can't risk getting him injured. They can't risk losing him for an extended period because he's critical to what Newcastle are going to do over the course of the next weeks and months and the remainder of the season, really. So the other point is whether it is a back five. And if it is a back five, then with Dan Burn being suspended, does Cher, Chow and Botman come together as a back three? If not, is it Botman and Chow continuing? And if it is, and if it's going to be that 4 there and a 4 at Marseille, what happens between Botman and Burn? Who starts there? It's been that big selection call we've been waiting on for Eddie Howe to have to make, and usually one or the other reason has been that he hasn't had to make the selection call. He doesn't this weekend, but going forward he potentially might if it isn't a back three that he's playing.
Johan Wisse, as you mentioned there, he'll have been pleased to have seen the good Dr. Congo through to a World Cup playoff tournament in his absence after they beat Cameroon and Nigeria in an African qualifying runoff. The aforementioned Chancellor Mbemba got the winning goal in that game.
Yeah, and I mean, the big call with Johan Wisse at the moment is, will he actually be... Sorry, I said Wisse, didn't I?
It is Wisse. Did I say Visser? I didn't. Did I said Wisse?
I don't think so. I think I just second guessed myself. sorry. But yeah, for Johan Wisse, the big call at the moment is he going to be involved in the Africa Cup of Nations next month? If he gets called up, he has to go. It basically comes down to what DR Congo do, because if they call him up and he refuses to go, then he can't play for Newcastle during that period of time either.
I can't see a situation where they don't call him up, Chris.
Well, yeah, we'll have to wait and see on that regard, because they may just decide that physically for him it's better if he's around Newcastle, and particularly if they have this World Cup playoff, is that the priority? But I also think we also have to look at it as the Africa Cup of Nations is obviously the equivalent of the Euros. It's huge, and I do think a few people, I've seen a few commentaries from people saying, oh, he definitely shouldn't go, you know, he's Newcastle's player. But I do think that's a bit disparaging of AFCON, and if you flip this around and say if there was an equivalent of David Beckham playing in MLS at the moment and England were going to be playing in the Euros, and it was like, and he'd been injured, and then into Miami say, oh, you can't go at the Euros, you know, you have to stay here, I'm sure there'd be uproar about the fact that he wasn't involved in the Euros. So I see it both ways, but it depends whether Wisse himself wants to go there, whether he feels that he's best served being at Newcastle. But for now, that's a problem they'll have to deal with slightly further down the line. For now, they just want to get him back playing, get him playing. I said back again, but just actually get him involved just in Newcastle shirt for the first time. Yeah.
Local hero will precede the Bladen races once again after a dressing room led change to the singing order as well.
Yeah, so we had this from War Flags before the international break, where they revealed that, according to them, the dressing room and the coaching staff, there was a request to change the sort of pre-match order. And so Local Hero, which has largely been the tune that has welcomed them out onto the pitch since the early 90s, has been flipped with the Bladen races. And they said they wanted to, the reasoning was supposedly they wanted to actually hear the crowd singing and to increase the atmosphere in that regard, because obviously Local Hero has no words. It's been a controversial change. Some people like it. I think a lot of people haven't necessarily liked it or haven't got used to it yet.
Chris, there's nothing quite like 52,000 people getting the words wrong to the Bladen races to start a game of football.
Well, quite. I suppose the thing I find curious about is, and I realise that you can say the message of trying to get out via War Flags, but I don't think it's been massively well communicated that that's what they actually wanted either. Yeah. So if you're going to make this change, I just think it could have been better communicated. I asked Eddie Howe about it just before the international break. He talked about, yeah, it was an attempt to improve the atmosphere, but he wasn't directly involved in it. So it was a bit of a wishy-washy answer. I will be writing about it hopefully before this weekend, just asking a few people what they think about it and try and find a little bit more about the background to it. But yeah, we'll have to see in time whether it works. It hasn't affected Newcastle's performances at home necessarily, or certainly hasn't affected the results. And yeah, we'll have to see how it affects him against Man City.
I do love Local Hero, the kind of the end of that, just before the game starts, where you get the little do-do-do-do-do and the silence, and then the crowd fills that silence with a roar, usually. And I really love that roar. And in that moment, I usually bellow Howe United as loud as I can at the top of my voice. I did this once up in level 7, and I was very close to the staircase and slightly lost my foot and pulled a muscle in my back. So I'm I'm glad that will be happening again. But I will miss that little moment of, like, I don't know, it's like a really weird sort of, I don't know, I find it quite stimulating and quite exciting when you get that little moment of silence and then a rah.
Yeah, and it's what you come to expect as well. And that's what I think.
Yeah.
You'd only be able to tell in time whether the sort of new tradition, as it may become, whether it works or not. But yeah, you become, match day in particular, it's not, people say superstition, and maybe some people do have superstition, but it's also just, it's your routine, it's what you expect from the game, it's part of your day, really. And if that's changed around slightly, then it can be incongruous and maybe feel like you've lost a little something, so we'll have to wait and see.
As a man who's worn the same pair of underpants for the last 15 Newcastle games I've been to, yes, I don't like change. They have been washed, I would just like to specify.
I'm glad you clarified that. Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah. Right then, as we mentioned earlier on, that extra Tyne episode this week is a Q&A. Make sure you get your questions in to podonthetyne@gmail.com if you want to take part in that. Thanks very much for your time, Chris.
You're very, very welcome. Yes, no worries, George. We'll just do your job for you as you swan off around the world. But yeah.
Globetrotting, being all windswept and interesting. Terrible, isn't it? Leaving us, holding the bands. Anyway, get in touch. Email podonthetyne@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter X and Blue Sky @podonthetyne. That is just about it. Thank you very much for listening. We shall speak to you very, very soon. Take care. Goodbye.
About a third full as well. The Melbourne, similar.